Would you introduce yourselves, please?
We're the 100 Days, and I'm Brett.
I'm Jonathan.
I'm Jimmy.
I'm Colin, and I play drums.
And when did you first actually start playing music together?
Late 2005, 2006, we met.
So this is a six-year-old band. This is not like, right. You ain't the, and I don't mean this as a pun, but you're not the new kids on the block.
Right.
Yeah, but I'm actually the newest member of the band. I've been in the band for about a year.
Oh my gosh, a baby, just a babe.
So he is the new kid on the block.
But there's been quite an evolution with the sound of this band, though, over the years.
I am an original member of the band that was the band before the 100 Days, which was called Palooka. And it was me, Colin, the drummer, and John, the singer. And we went on tour, and it was a nightmare, and we broke up. And one thing we realized after it was all said and done is that this band we had previous to this, called Palooka, didn't really have a solid sound. We were kind of confused. It kind of wavered between what everyone wanted to do. It was kind of folky. It went kind of electronic. It went kind of, I don't know. Yeah, yeah.
I love folk.
And that was part of what we were arguing about a lot. So the thing that we were determined to do with the new band that we formed by putting out Craigslist ads was to find the sound right away. Just, you know, find like where the core, some, you know, just sort of lay down the foundation as soon as possible. So what we did is we decided as soon as we got the new guys, we were just going to go, you know, into a retreat, you know, into, you know, a secluded location and just work on songs night and day constantly. So that was going to be, we found these guys and then we were going to do it for about, you know, a month. And then it went so great that it just kept going on and on and on. But that pretty much merges into how we found the name of the band, which was the 100 Days. And that's pretty much how long it took to establish the sound and the songs that we recorded in those sessions. You can hear on the new album, actually.
Marcus is the original bass player, and I joined the band, and the sound just, it changed to the point where we just said, you know, this is something, it's just a whole new thing, and with that, it gave us the freedom to do whatever we wanted, and we all came in with very different music influences, and I think it started off, when we first all got together, it had a... There was more of a shoegaziness to it, but I think we sat around and had such a good time together that it became more of a happy and positive vibe, and it kind of just started evolving more and more into dance music, and so we're actually, I think we are still on that, it's like a... Still, you could see that you could actually hear the evolution. You know, there's some of the songs that are a little more swoony and some of the songs a little more dancey.
Well, yeah, I just remember the room that we were in. It was this sort of dungeon in the basement of a hotel in the Tenderloin, and there were all kind of pipes sticking out of the wall and dust sort of like falling out onto this ratty carpet. And I just remember writing songs in there till like 3 or 4 in the morning, and people like stumbling in all stoned from the studio next door. And that's kind of the image that comes to me when I remember the beginnings of the band, rather than the sound. I just remember what it felt like back then. It was just sort of a really bizarre and dark beginning.
The 100 Days, was that in Crystal Meth Land?
Yeah.
That was in Crystal Meth Land, right? That was that. So you kind of, and the great part is you didn't even partake, but it was probably a funky, interesting place, knowing that you're kind of surrounded by, you know, that you know, because when you go out, it was Columbia, right?
Paradise.
Yeah, paradise, right? So you know, how ironic, right? And yet you're kind of making, you know, modern music there. So, you know, when you left that room to go out into the fresh air, that must have been an interesting environment, was it not?
The thing about Paradise is that it kind of has elements that you would find in San Francisco, like a meth problem, a drug problem, kind of a zombie problem. And then you also have the beauty of the trees and the canyon and the surroundings. So it was definitely, I think where San Francisco would just provide the grit, you know, paradise provided like the etherealness and like the beauty, side by side with the grit, you know, which, I mean, I want to say shows in our music, but you know, who knows? I mean, it sounds like really good interview gold to say it was the trees combined with the zombies on meth that formed our sound, you know, but, yeah, I mean, I think that had something to do with it. So the reason Jimmy's idea definitely worked for John and I is John and I have always been Blind Melon fans. And if you look at their history, it's full of going and retreating and coming up with all their ideas. Like before their first album, they went out to some Southern house retreat or something and came up. Yeah.
Yeah, they rented an old house in the South, and then they created the whole album there of Soup, which most people don't even know about that album, but it's one of our all our like favorite all-time albums, and it's sort of this totally underrated gem from the 90s.
So it's 3 years later, from 2008. Time has passed by, and next thing you know, you come out of retreat. You have the songs, you have the style, you have the positive energy. And you say, okay, we got this stuff. What do we do now? So there's obviously some dotted or solid line between there and getting a major producer with you in the studio to record this thing.
We had listened to the Killers' Hot Fuss album and really liked the production and the mixing. So we were just like, well, what if we just asked Mark Needham and Jeff Saltzman to, you know, to produce us? And having been a new band, we were like, well, yeah, right, but let's ask him anyway. And, you know, we just contacted them, and they loved the music, and they said that they wanted to do it, and it was amazing, you know. So we just did the first one with both those guys, and it was a great experience and just took us to the next level.
Let's see, here's some good quotes. The Indie It Kids, smartest new young band.
This is a collective of Michael Patterson, our producer, and everyone who kind of helped out, our management, you know, the people that assisted in the studio, and all their contacts, all their kind of world in LA, which is Musebox, our PR firm, and Uncle, which is our radio promoter. We're definitely hungry and looking and seeking for a label representation. So just wanted to make that clear.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because
okay. I'm always kind of concerned that the fact that we call Papa Antipop a label could be hurting us or helping us. I'm not quite sure. So just wanted to point that out.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a label that they're trying. It's a kind of their Michael Patterson's experiment. You know, he's done a lot of mixing and producing, and he's taken us on, and, you know, he has a limited budget. We have an even more limited budget. And so, I mean, that's kind of what it is. You know what it is? It's really is just a community of people who are trying to put something out there. And everyone is, you know, they're kind of a producer. We're kind of full-time musicians, but we're not, you know, and we're all, and our manager is, she's probably the most full-time of all, but, you know, but we're all just kind of playing it by ear, and every day it's different, and every day it's an adventure, and we get a tour, and we go, well, how the heck am I going to pay for it? And you have no idea how many conversations we have about guarantees and you know, like, and guarantees that are not really that big. We're working, you know, we're like, you know, half musicians, half accountants, really, you know, trying to make the numbers work. So we've been asked many times, like, what keeps you guys going? The thing that does not keep us going is the money. I mean, we're obviously not in it for the money, you know. I mean, with the music business as it is, and so I mean, you know, it comes with its pluses and minuses. The pluses are that the people who are involved in it are obviously in it for the love of it, and so, you know, they're, in that sense, there's a shared struggle. So you really do bond with the community that's left. The minus is obviously is that there's just way more juggling, and it's not nearly as glamorous as people may imagine. It's not like we're doing coke, drinking beer, and off on the big fancy tour bus. We are drinking beer, and I did do a couple lines of coke in the bathroom earlier, but other than that, yeah, it's a small, crappy van. It's not a big fancy bus, and the girls are ugly. They're not hot because we're not that famous. Most interviews, everyone treats interviewing the band like it's a person, like it's a corporation, it's an individual, when really a band is four different people that are four individuals with four different opinions, and it's a constant battle on what sounds good. It's four different people, and you know, everyone's battling for their ideas, and hopefully the good ideas rises to the top. And same with how commercial you are, you know, like just when you, if you ask for all of us and you go, what is your goal for the band? Do you want to get signed, big, small, you know, you'll really get four different answers. And it's those four different answers, those four different positions that are just, you know, constantly battling. And the result is just kind of somewhere in the middle, you know, like, you know, where do you want to take this music? It really is four different people constantly arguing. It's somehow it just kind of works its way out and you end up wherever you are.
I'm sitting with the band that got the NME MP3 of the worldwide, oh my gosh, right? It's a big eye-opener for the people that are listening to this interview that just because your press says, wow, you know, the NME called Sex U, you know, the MP3, which is kind of funny, the MP3 of the year, whatever that means, you know, it's not even the song of the year, it's the MP3 of the year. But just because you got that from what you're describing and what I'm hearing here, that doesn't mean that suddenly riches have magically occurred. And it's big learning for the world we live in today that even if you get the cover of the Rolling Stone or you get the NME Award or you're even nominated for the Mercury Prize, that doesn't mean that several years later.
No, but I think what you alluded to earlier about our production value in this album for a band that supposedly doesn't really want huge success, why would we have an album like that? I think we definitely want huge success. It's something that is kind of sort of shoved back and back and further in our brains or our hearts or whatever as you go on the road to this goal and you get constantly disappointed. I mean, we're constantly being like, oh yeah, Atlanta is coming to this next show, or you have a meeting with this guy or that guy and they don't show up or whatever, you know? And you just learn to kind of narrow things down to its essence after all these, you know, trials and tribulations to like, we just, you know, if we can just get the word out, just get the music out and, you know, have people respect what we do, then that's good enough. Or if we can just leave our jobs, that's good enough. But I think hidden, you know, along the way is definitely, you know, an acceptance, a yearning, whatever, to make it huge. I think Brett has more to say about this.
But I think everyone's kind of explanation of what they think success is very different, not only within the band, but within a lot of other bands too.
I do this thing called a musical sandwich, and it's two of your songs as the bread and songs by any other artist that you want to play in between.